Hey guys, before we get started with part two of this episode, I want you guys to understand that having mentors is so important. And if you can't see through this episode that mentors provide you with a safe space to be honest, to be real, to be authentic, then I don't even know how to help you. But if anything, you should be encouraged to have real conversations with mentors and cultivate real relationships with your mentors, not your sponsors, not your advocates. These are your mentors, and there's a difference. So this is part two of Joanna and I's conversation from last week, where we only got into more shenanigans. But again, more nuggets dropped. So let me know how you are internalizing this conversation, because we talked about a lot of things. Hit me up at ask@trillmba.com. You can also hit me up on all the social media channels at Trill MBA Show. At Trill MBA Show on everywhere on the internet. You can always go to trillmba.com and send me a letter as well. So let's get into part two. I hope you guys have as much fun listening to this as we had recording it.
I mean, this is a good discussion, but I think that that Harvard Business Review article is going to bring up more. It requires more dialogue. I was upset. I think if employers are open to the idea, they should take that article and use it to uncover how the diversity in their organization meets the challenge of you know, black people feeling comfortable in their organization being their authentic self. I had a mentor at one time say to me, unironically, when we were talking about, you know, a project to be able to have an authentic culture in the organization. And my mentor said to me, yeah, I know we're working on this project, but I don't believe that there's anything such as being your authentic self at work.
I've had senior leaders say that to me.
And yes, and this was a senior leader. And honestly, they were absolutely right. I think that there's, I don't know if they're in current corporate, I don't know if there's a dynamic where anybody could feel like they can bring their be their authentic self without risk of, you know, career suicide or risk of being judged unfairly or risk of getting that bad performance review or risk of being perceived as, you know, not as good as. Or risk of being, you know, there's all sorts of things attached to it.
Okay, so my new gig is an experiment, right?
Yes.
And so the thing is, I got a trill ass boss. Like, she's not a Becky, she's a Hannah.
She sounds fantastic. Every time you tell me about her, she sounds fantastic.
To the point where one day we were at this happy hour that the company had to celebrate some shit. I don't know, but they had pizza. I was like, nigga, I'm in. Pizza, free pizza. So she came and joined us. And mind you, she got some kids and shit. Like, she got a whole family situation. So she be needing to leave the office, right, at the appropriate time to leave when you got children. But she came down, and I was like, Hannah, I'm going to speak to you in my Black English vernacular right now. I fucks with you. That's what I told her. I was like, I fucks with you. Like, I love her spirit. She laughs loud. Nigga, when was the last time you had a manager that laughed loud? Like, I laugh loud. My boss laughs loud. I love it. I love her laughing in the office.
My last series of bosses were all stressed beyond belief.
Right? And the thing is, it's not that she's not stressed, because she's been running a one-woman show for months.
She just knows how to handle it.
She should have had at least 3 direct reports. She got 13 fucking brands in her portfolio, right? Like, she's a boss bitch, okay? And the cool thing is, I can say all this at the end of this show right here, because she's not going to hear all this. So it's so funny. I forgot to tell you this. So she told me in passing, she was like, yeah, I listened to your podcast, but it was like week 2. She's like, I listened to your podcast, but I was like, okay. I didn't probe. Because I already know, like, if you're not a podcast listener, you're not listening to all this shit. You're not, you just feel like people talking at you.
Right.
You're not listening. And I only get real ignorant past like the second break. Yeah. So I was like, bet.
Right.
But the thing is, like, I hope one day she does listen to all this because I fucking love her. Like, I love, she's authentic. And even though she's a white woman, like, she's lived in different parts of the country. She's been exposed to different things. And she's just super fucking supportive. And for me saying, hey, I want to try to be the CEO of this fucking company, right? Being my black ass self in certain ways. Because I'm not getting rid of this podcast. Like, I already determined. I was like, if they come to me and say, hey, Felicia, so you signed this code of conduct. And you be saying nigga on your podcast. I'll be like, yeah, so do you want me to tender my resignation? Or what we doing? Because I'm not giving this up. This is me at a 10. Well, right now, me at a 12 because I've been drinking. But like... This is me at a 10. This is my full, I give you guys everything I got because this is our safe space.
Yeah.
For us to just put the shit out there and say as much as we can without getting sued because we don't got no money. So, you know, we just as honest as we can be with our experiences and what we've lived and learned, and we're just trying to get it right. So, like, I'm not giving this up. I feel like how you feel when you mentor us because people be telling me like, yo, I thought I was the only one going through this shit. You don't know how much that means to me, like to the point where I want to cry sometimes when I get these letters from people.
It's a wonderful feeling. It's the part that is the best part of being in this corporate space has been the mentoring aspect. And for me, as you know, a lot of my mentoring came not from people who worked in the companies that I worked for, mm-hmm. but a lot of the mentoring came from people who were fresh MBA grads, mm-hmm. people who were still in grad school looking and finding me either through National Black MBA or through Howard alumni or through other connections.
Consortium.
And to see everyone thrive mm-hmm. is the biggest, like... I'm not going to cry, but it's the biggest compliment to know that I've been a part. Like, I know it's not just because of me, because I know it takes an army. I know it takes a village. And I know that these are really smart women that I mentored. So,
but you have been integral to my crew. You have been. And I just want to sit here and tell you, thank you, because all the shit you've been through that you had to go through on your corporate journey has never been in vain. Because that has allowed you to sow seeds into us. So don't ever think that this shit that you've been through, and you've been through some shit.
I have. I will say, let me tell you, though, I want to say also, because I don't want people to think that, oh, Lord, she's been through the roller coaster of careers.
But you're a black woman in corporate, so yeah. Whatever that is, you've been through it.
This is true. But similar to you, like, you have a great supervisor now. Like, God, when you run into a situation like that, and I've been lucky enough to have had that. The difference for me is that I had it early. Mm-hmm. I had it early. And my best supervisor, you know, white woman, mm-hmm. She's phenomenal. She is a friend of mine now. Mm-hmm. But I was able to be my authentic self with her in a way that I don't think I've ever been with another supervisor. Maybe one other white male. Right. And he treated us like family.
Right.
You know, when his family had celebrations for things, he invited us over. And so his kids would come to the office and draw us pictures. And
right.
Now they're all graduated from college. Like, oh, it's, God. It's, I don't know, one's a college graduate, one's going into college, another one's about to finish high school.
And it's like, stop it.
Oh my gosh, I remember when you used to be willing to the office. Right. But so I had some phenomenal managers up front. Mm-hmm. And that gave me hope. And I tell people, it gave me false hope that all of corporate was like this.
Oh, hell
and
no.
Then, and then I got my first bad manager. Like, because mm-hmm. I'd been in corporate maybe 6-7 years before I had my first horrible mm-hmm. manager. And I went,
you know, God has blessed you.
Yeah. I started again, Pfizer, consumer healthcare. Mm-hmm. Big props. I had a phenomenal set of managers, two up managers, three up managers, like all of them were phenomenal. And quite honestly, on some level, whether it's LinkedIn, Facebook, or even in person, I still keep in touch with them.
Awesome. Key, ding, 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 nugget. Keep in touch with the motherfuckers that ride with you.
They were phenomenal, and they remain phenomenal. And yeah. I'm still in awe, and I'm still heartbroken that the original Pfizer Consumer Healthcare no longer exists, because that was a company that had at least it had the right framework for how to think about evaluating talent, for how to treat diversity and inclusion. They didn't always get it right, but they kept trying.
Right.
And they didn't say, well, this is our definition, just deal with it and sweep it under the rug, or we're going to go through this boot camp and do lip service. They never did lip service on it. So I appreciate that. For me, the problem was that was my first experience. And then when I got to the crazies, I went, I don't know how to deal with this. I don't know how to deal with this. They didn't teach me how to deal with bad.
Right.
They didn't teach me how to deal with, you know, managers who were like a walking episode of The Office.
The most fundamental thing about sensitivity training is that you cannot make fun of a person for something or some action that they have done that they regret. You can only make fun of things that they have control over. Like Oscar is gay. That is his choice. We can make fun of that. I did not choose to fall into a koi pond.
Miley, you still can't make fun of people for race or gender or sexual orientation or religion.
Who let the lemonhead into the room?
They didn't teach me how to deal with that, you know? The mandatory, you know, birthday lunches and, you know, the mandatory dress for Halloween and, you know, the mandatory potlucks. Like, I didn't know how to deal with that. And so it took me a while to figure out that I had to figure out a new game.
Right.
And that the game was not being my authentic self and then it parlaying itself into, congratulations, we appreciate you being candid. We appreciate you being smart. We appreciate you, you know, stumbling and falling, but picking yourself up and learning from it and doing better. That was the reality in the beginning.
Right.
That was not the reality for how corporate really looks.
Right.
And so once, you know, Pfizer Consumer went away, and I was in a new space, and then I had other companies that I was working for, I had to relearn how to, the game was different.
So the point I want you guys to get there is that every company culture is different. And you have to learn the company culture. And to understand how to navigate that particular culture, because there are some cultures that treat us better than others. And I will say, this current culture I'm in, I think the difference for me, one, is I'm more confident in my abilities. And I'm more confident to say, like, shit, I don't know, but I'm gonna figure it out. So I figured it out. Don't worry about it. I got you. And then two, I have a really good manager who cares about people. So my thing is, it's a principle thing. I'm a Capricorn, right? I'm a Capricorn. I'm half Nigerian. Child, help me. Pray for me, y'all. So, like, when my car got broken into, it was the day 4 of my new job. A car got broken into, my work laptop and all my purse, everything got stolen. So I called my boss. I'm like, you know that work top, you worked so hard to get me on day 1. It just got stolen. And she said, are you okay? And for me, I was like, anything you want, anything you need. Like, it was like a 90s R&B song. I was like, I got you. Anything, I will work until midnight, over, like, whatever. Because it has been so long since I had a manager. When my mom died in 2015, nobody cared. To the point where the CMO of the company I was working on, God bless his heart, I was out of the office wrapping up stuff, right? Getting ready for a funeral, all this stuff. He went up to another black girl Office. Who was she? Was she had hot butter rolls too, right? But she wasn't as big as I was. Like, she's not even as tall as I am, right? She's just a little chunky.
So I'm not ready for this story, am I?
He goes up to her and he says, "Hey, I just want to give you condolences on your mom passed."
No.
Now, the crazy thing is her mom had passed 4 years prior.
Oh, God. No.
So she was like, thank you. Because you the CMO, so. And he meant well, right? But then it's the whole, do niggas look alike? Now, mind you, I don't look nothing like this. Like, she's a wonderful human being. She is mad cool people. Like, I would hire her, right? Like, if I could afford her, I would hire her. So when I got back in the office after my mom died, which was, you know, about 10 days or so, I had to do a stint in the psych ward. Remember when I was in the psych ward? Oh, my God. We got to tell this story.
I'm going to snatch your wine from you.
No, wait. Okay, so my mom died. I was in the psych ward, and I had two phones. I always got two phones.
This? So, oh, my gosh.
And I remember big this titties. Moment.
That's
I got
why big I'm just, titties. This is why I'm like, we're going to snatch the wine because I know the story.
No, wait. I'm going to keep a trail.
You probably should not tell this
fuck
story.
It. I'm going to keep a trail. So my mom dies. And I, like, want to kill myself. I'm in the psych ward. And, like, because my mama died, y'all. Like, niggas, come on. My mama died. Come on. So, like, I stick one phone in my titties and they take one phone. So, I still got one. I got the burner phone, right? So, I, like, text Joanna and Tiffany. I'm like, hey, I can't plug it in because they took the plug, too. But, like, I'm going to text y'all until my phone dies. Like, I was in the psych ward for, like, 3 days. And, like, I'm texting these niggas, like, y'all, get me out of here.
Now, you have to understand, for context, in terms of my reaction, again, we've talked about my mother. We've talked about how my mother is a PhD. Did we mention that my mother was a psychologist? She's in social work, and she's done a right. little bit of clinical social work.
Did you tell your mom about this?
Yeah. The furrowed brow and the worry, yeah. She was concerned.
So wait.
Because that's not normal.
I'm like, I'm on a 72-hour hold. So like, I'm not supposed to have this phone, but I can hide one of these phones under my titties. They found one, but they didn't find the second one. So like, so I'm texting them like, y'all get me out of here, oh my God. It's like crazy. Like, I'm not this crazy. I just said my mom died. So like,
and here's the thing. So let's back up for a second. You're going through a lot. Yes. And you're going through like psych ward and mom grief and all of this stuff. I tell you, there's an opportunity for all of us who've ever been through anything like this, especially for parents, like if you're, you know, extraordinarily close to a family member or if you've been a caregiver.
Right.
Like, there's something to be said for giving room for empathy
mm-hmm.
and room for increased focus on work-life balance in those situations.
Right.
There are some companies that are great at it. You know, right. When my mom was sick in early 2000s, Pfizer was great. Back in the early 2000s, my mother had a major medical incident.
Oh.
And I got a phone call that Friday that my mom might need to have surgery.
Fuck.
And that Saturday morning, I called my supervisor because I had his home number,
mm-hmm.
called him. He said, go. And we didn't look back. I didn't come back to the office for weeks.
Okay.
Weeks, you know? And I remember when I first came back to the office after the incident, they're like, we weren't expecting you to come back. How are you doing? Mm-hmm. So they were really right. gracious about it.
Right.
And really, you know, pushed me to put family first. So again, all of this happened early on in my career post MBA.
Right.
And so I had this wonderful experience. And then I saw reality like Girl. Years later. So there's something to be said for, you know, if somebody were to ask the question, what does a good supervisor look like? Sympathy and empathy. I'm going to keep repeating it over and over and over again, because at the end of the day, the work is going to be there whether you show up in the office or not.
Amen.
The corporations, particularly the publicly traded ones, will find a way to get the work done if Amen. You are not there. It is not dependent on you.
Amen.
So if you can find a company, if you can find a supervisor, if you can find a department that places its priority on your personal well-being in spite of the mounting workload, and can find a way to rally around you in those situations where you can't even do for yourself personally, those are the companies where you want to consider, instead of job hopping, you may want to consider putting in a consideration for being there a bit longer term.
Right.
Because those companies are hard to find.
Oh, God. And so how do you discern between is the company and the manager? Because I feel like for me, I'm new, right? So I'm still trying to discern and learn, but certain things indicate that it might be a cultural thing, but then everything tells me my manager's the shit.
So
right? Like my manager is a good manager.
Here's my counsel. in my experience, it's not an either or, it's an and.
Mm.
So if you're in an organization that has a culture that is mediocre or worse, but you have a great manager,
mm-hmm.
that manager is likely insulating you from the rest of the crazy.
Right.
So, which means you can survive in that company until you get a different manager.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're in a company that is mediocre or worse, and you have
both.
Right. And if you have a not so good manager, it spells trouble, because when you're talking about performance reviews and career progression, the first line of defense in that situation is to have a manager that's going to be an advocate for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about finding a mentor inside the company that's going to be your advocate. You can have somebody else in the company to be your advocate, but your manager should be your very first advocate. So if you're in a crazy company and you're working for somebody who is not a good boss and doesn't look like they're in a position to give you a good review or to even advocate for you,
mm-hmm.
I don't care. Even if you were at a great company mm-hmm. and you run into that buzzsaw of the crazy manager, you're probably not going to get past it. You're not going to be able to progress your career because you're not going to have the advocacy in place for somebody to override your manager's perception
right.
of you.
Right.
So if you're in a great company and you have a horrible manager, chances are you probably gonna still need to leave and look for something else, because you're not, because it's all about career forward momentum. It's all about progress.
Right.
It's not about waiting to see if it'll get better and maybe when they reorg, I'll get another manager and it'll work out. Doesn't.
Right. So what do you think of this idea? And I will post the article about it. I read an article some years ago that said, if you stay longer than 3 years, you're losing money.
I don't know the economics of it, but I can believe it. I can believe it only because if the theory is that most companies are bad. So, right. So when you talk on this podcast, we're under the assumption that like, all corporations, you know, same body, different dress, right? Like,
right.
So if we're under the assumption that that's the majority,
mm-hmm.
then that means that you're dealing with companies where the longer you stay, you're likely going to run into a cap on your potential somewhere in the first 5 years. So if you stay and you're not maximizing your potential in that organization, when you could have left that company, you could have resigned and then gone to another company
mm-hmm.
where you could have made more money, negotiated a bigger salary, negotiated a bigger title. You've left money on the table by staying longer mm-hmm. in an organization that doesn't have your best interests.
Right.
So, you know, when I first got into corporate, you know, I think I had a little of my boomer parents in my mind of like, stay as long as you need to stay. It's a great company. But then when you start getting into the fact that companies get bought and sold all the time and there's always change and there's mergers and divestitures and reorganizations and restructuring and all that sort of stuff, stay until the company starts to hint to you mm-hmm. that you've reached your potential there.
Right.
And when you're, again, I talk about that gut feeling, when your gut starts telling you that something's not right or that it's going to be a harder walk to get to the next level than it had been when you first got there, call the recruiters, send them your resume, move along.
Right.
One of the things I wish I could do over is I wish I could have left places that didn't have my best interests sooner than I did. It did me no favors, and it slowed my career progression.
Right.
The acceleration was there in the beginning.
Right.
And then it came to a screeching crawl.
Right.
Because of the lack of, you know, strong managerial support. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, I'm like, I can overcome it. You know, sometimes we black women wear these superhero capes, right, thinking that we can push through. Pull off the cape. Pull off the cape. Go do for yourself. There's something else to be done. And if you start to get those signs, trust me, somebody else will want you.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Somebody else will want you.
Oh, lots of... Listen, ladies. If you have a skill set, you have degrees, you have results on your resume you can speak to, a whole lot of other people want you. There is a talent war going on right now globally. And there is also a huge talent war for underrepresented minority talent. So do not stay in an organization when you know it's time to leave. That's the number one takeaway from this episode. Thank you for sharing that, Joanna, because I think a lot of us, we get so complacent, like, especially once you've gone through a couple business cycles and you're like, oh, I got this, and you get comfortable. Don't get comfortable, ladies.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. And, you know, I've been at a company where I've been like one of four minorities, mm-hmm, in leadership, or one of two, or being at a certain level and being the highest ranking, but you know your title does not start with a C or a S or an E. You're not an EVP. You're not an SVP. You're not a C, but you're the highest ranking.
Which is driving me crazy.
Yeah, and so I've been there and I've seen that, and it's not a comfortable feeling.
No,
it's not a comfortable feeling. It's a very isolating feeling. So, yeah, I mean, I think you have to recognize that there are some companies out there that may not be ready, mm-hmm, to tackle the hard conversations about diversity, let alone authenticity.
Right. Which pissed me off about this article, right? Like, 'cause it was like, that whole onus is on us to make them comfortable. Fuck that shit. So I realized for me, I use my How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, because Dale Carnegie was a white man who wrote some shit for some white men, and I'm going to use that, right? Like, I tell people all the time, like, use what white people use for themselves to help you. And I take those principles of human behavior, and I'm like, okay, how do I package my authenticity in a way, like homeboy who is not black, in order to make my authenticity work for me?
It's called code switching.
Whoa!
When you repackage your authenticity, that is code switching. But because let's be straight. You want to be true? Let's be true.
Yes.
When you work for people who are throwing out F-bombs and MFs and cursing in meetings and walking around, mm-hmm, being their authentic selves,
right,
and they don't look like us, mm-hmm, but they're getting the reward of being, you know, VPs and presidents and CMOs and chief whatevers.
Right.
They're not repackaging their authenticity to look like anything else. They're just being themselves and getting the benefit of having somebody else advocate for them regardless of how they come across. We don't get the benefit of that. Hence that whole, that's why I said it's still code switching. I hear what you're saying. Like, use the Dale Carnegie book, to kind of get a peek into the mindset of how.
I mean, I'm trying to figure it out.
It's you know, it's another book that my mom loves, Games People Play, which is another. You know what? You're gonna make me look it up.
I'm gonna link it. No, don't look it up. I'm gonna link it. Games People Play.
It's an old book. It's an old popular psychology book. And so you want to know? I mean, it's a tough read because it's very clinical. But it's one of those things where you have to figure out what other people are doing and how other people are thinking so that you can figure out how to react. So the Dale Carnegie book is perfect.
Is it by Eric Byrne?
That is the book.
Got you. I will link this in the podcast episode, yeah.
And so, you know, so to your point, there's something to be said for figuring out how to engage with other people to play the game that you may not know is being played. You got to figure out what the game is first, right? Mm-hmm. That's the first lesson.
Step one,
figure out what the game is first.
Yep.
But, you know, I think the unfortunate reality is for people who look like me and you,
mm-hmm.
we're always going to have to your point, to what you just said, repackage our authenticity to make it palatable for the majority.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something, I mean, it's a sad reality. I'm optimistic that maybe in 10 years it'll look very different. But for right now, our number one job in terms of extending our survival in corporate is to figure out how to make sure that our authentic selves doesn't trip up our perception inside of an organization so that we can still get the advocacy. We can get as much advocacy as possible. Mm-hmm. Now, is that what the HBR article was trying to say? Sort of, being strategic about it, right? But I think the way they were going about it, I guess the way to say it is like, when you're reading it in an HBR article, it makes it seem like, you know, both the organization has a responsibility in this and the Black person has a responsibility in this. That's not reality. The reality is the organization has a responsibility for us. The Black people's responsibility is not to try to code switch strategically.
Right.
We don't code switch strategically because it's our responsibility as a way to make all of it work in an organization.
Right.
We're doing it for survival.
Yes.
So Black people don't have a responsibility to do it. We do it because we have to.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a part of our, it's an integral part of how we have to play a game just to survive another day, just to be seen for that next promotion, just to get that raise or bonus.
Right.
We have to. And again, it doesn't mean be inauthentic. It doesn't mean, you know, tell them that you eat pork when you don't.
Or don't be prudent.
Right. And it doesn't mean be prudent either.
Right.
Like, I don't recommend that. Again, that started as a joke. And that it was a joke that I ran with and then came back and was like, girl, they bought it, you know, but here's the thing. And I said this to an executive coach at the time that, you know, right after Prudence had been, you know, dead and buried. I said to her, to the executive coach, I said, I learned so much in doing it. I don't regret doing it.
Right.
To this, nobody knows I did it.
Right.
Nobody knows I did it.
Well, now they do.
Now they do. But I don't regret doing it because I walked away learning about the game.
Right.
I learned what the game was. I learned how people's perceptions of me changed and what those triggers were.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like what I learned. I didn't like what I learned. It was awful to know that the gap between my real self and the accepted prudence, I didn't like the fact that the gap was that wide. I shouldn't have to do all of that.
Right.
So yeah, I think the key thing for me, again, to not to continue to beat the devil out of this HBR article, but the key thing for me that just made me mad is that HBR article made it sound like the burden is on both sides. The burden is on one side, the organization.
Yes.
Black people will continue to code switch whether Harvard tells them to do it or not.
Amen.
And Black people will continue to code switch strategically whether Harvard tells you to or not.
Amen.
Because if we don't do it, we don't succeed in anything that we do.
Amen.
Full stop.
We
don't want to get followed in the store? Code switch. So, I know, and that's wrong for me to say, but
no,
it's true.
But even, look, I never forget me and my line sisters and one of my sorors, the sorors that got us into pledging. So for y'all that don't know, I'm a member of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated. So me, Krista, Chantel, and Kiana, we were in Chicago at the Louis Vuitton store. I never forget this. And Krista is an attorney, and she was working corporate. And so she's making all this money, and so she's going to buy her first Louis bag. $2,000 she was about to spend. And we were all there cheering her on. When I tell you they treated us like shit on the Chicago Mile, like they were like, oh no, hold on, we gonna take that bag down for you. Maybe you can touch it, maybe you can't. Like, it was so bad. And then like trailer park trash looking Becky's and Bob's came up in there, and they could touch whatever they wanted. And I was just like, wow, like, and to this day, I will never buy a Louis Vuitton bag.
From that store?
Well, no, I just like, I'm over it. Like, give me my Michael Kors. Give me, there's other bags to buy, right?
That has left a mark in my mouth
for the longest, because it's like, we have worked so hard to get to this station, to get to a title, to get to, you know, beyond where our ancestors thought we could be, and yet still be seen as a nigga.
But see, here's the thing. So I don't disagree with you. I think you made the right call for you personally. But remember, see, I'm about to pop some bubbles here.
Pop some bubbles.
All brands are problematic.
I mean, and as a brand manager, I agree. I have managed multiple hundreds of millions, almost $1 billion brands. I agree.
They're the devil. It is. I mean, and when you work as a marketer, you kind of know, and you just chuckle as you're doing it. Guess what we're selling them.
Right.
and it's being a marketer is great. Being a general manager is great. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you're working in packaged goods or you're working in luxury brands or anything else, you kind of know that you're, why are you pouring another no?
Okay. Well, I'm going to finish this bottle.
But you recognize. As I was saying, you know, when you work in marketing, you work in general management, you recognize that on some level, you know, you're peddling an ideal. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think back to, so one of my favorite recent, I don't know what you call these things. The History Channel shows these documentaries, but they have the actors reenacting the history of it. So I don't know.
Yes, if you, I need to get into
like
that.
Dramatic documentaries, yes. Or whatever they call them. But they had two series, and these are old series, but I just happened to catch up over on Thanksgiving because they were on. I'm like, right. These are great. But it was The Men Who Built America and then The Food That Built America.
Oh, The Men Who... Okay, I will link this.
The Food That Built America was amazing. Tells the story of how companies like Kellogg's and KFC and Coca-Cola... and Hershey, McDonald's, it tells how those companies were created. And those were some of the most dramatic-ass stories I've ever seen. I mean, look, Colonel Sanders with a shotgun shooting down somebody in the field was a little more than I expected. But it's a part of his story. And it was fascinating. But you get to, in some cases, you get to see how, especially kind of like pre-USDA, pre, FTC guidelines for what you can and can't say in commercials and on TV, you get to see how people were peddling stuff.
Right.
And it just goes to show you, you know, the kind of the early days of marketing and early days peddling of what marketers used to get away with. So again, all brands
right.
are problematic. So, but we love them so. They are. We love them because branding is fun.
like what I do. I just really want a organization to see the potential in me. And that's what's hard because as a black person, don't be sad. Like, we're drinking.
I know. It makes me sad. I don't mean to cut you off. I really don't. It makes me sad to hear you say that because, again, I remember you as a little pup from National Black MBA when you were looking for an internship.
Right.
So 11 years later, to know that you're still seeking an organization to confirm what you already know about yourself, which is you're the shit, right?
Well, no, I'm wearing this brilliant badass shirt, right? But I just want an organization to see me and to see the potential.
You know, there's a lot of work to be done to bring your authentic self.
Oh yeah.
And if we're not there, you know.
Oh no.
It's gonna take a long time.
Long
to get there.
Time. But I'm a nigga that's trying to figure out how to be the CEO and be a nigga.
But here's what I would encourage you to do. So here's my mentoring moment for you.
Yes, come through.
And I know you because your thing is you like to run at like 1,000 RPMs regardless.
Yes.
My counsel to you is to take a small bite of each thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you want an organization to see you, to see the authentic you. You've got a bird in the hand right now where we're not talking about your employer in the broad sense.
Right.
But you have a manager that sees you.
Yes.
Run with that.
I am.
Take the tiny bite. Recognize that you have a manager that sees you. Celebrate that you have a manager that sees you because that's a huge win.
Right.
And then whenever it's time for your manager to move on, whether that the manager gets promoted or whether they move to another company or whether you get rotated to another part of the company, regardless, your next step then would be, okay, let me see if I can find authenticity with this person. And just see if you can't keep taking those steps. One step at a time, person to person, on authenticity. By the time you get to manager number 3, ideally you would have had 3 different people confirm their support of your authenticity.
Right.
That's a win. Right. So take it at a piece. You've got one person supporting you. Mm-hmm. Run with it.
Right.
That's a huge victory.
And I understand I'm Felicia on a 2. So Felicia on 2 is comical and funny, but super
you have
smart.
A prudence?
No, I don't know how to do there's no prudence in my range. Prudence doesn't make it in my range. Here's Felicia, right? Because I'm extremely extroverted. I'm an ENFP, right? So I'm already crazy. So I know these things about myself. I am self-aware. What I have worked on and what I've researched, and thank God for this podcast, and thank you guys for listening. What I have learned through working on how do I bring my most authentic self to work is, one, I keep it positive.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't complain about bullshit that I can't fix, right?
Yes, because it's a job, not a life.
Right. The second rule I operate by is I try to infuse humor and I kind of inch people into Felicia at a 5, right? So, for example, I told my boss one day, I was like, I'm going to speak to you in my black English vernacular right now. So I explained to her what this was. And then I told her, I fucks with you.
You know what?
Because I do. That's real, though. I fucks with her. Like, the thing is, I just want to be in a place where if I care, if I love, if I feel, I want to be able to express that freely. And that's part of who I am.
Yes.
And so I've kind of learned who I am, and I've kind of become okay with that, mm-hmm. right? And now I'm figuring out how to be the best leader I can be as me.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I would say in the 20 years that I've been doing this, I have not only figured out me, like I know me, but I've also, and this is an interesting, this is kind of interesting of like what future state and the next thing that I'm eagerly looking forward to. One of the things that I learned in my past, one of my past roles, is there is value in being in an uncomplicated organization where you can practice organizational influence. There was, without consequence, right? Because you need room to be able to like pressure test, like, okay, you know, is this the type of organization where, you know, I have to network and have lunches with people and connect with them on a personal level in order for them to advocate for me? Or is this the type of company where I have to put up big numbers on my business and they just get to know me through presentations and other business-related interactions in order to get ahead? Or is this an organization where I need to learn how to play golf? Or is this an organization where, you know, and there are some out there, so I'll just put it out there. Or is this a type of organization where there's an expectation that you're going to attend the happy hours weekly and that you're going to drink at the same rate like everybody else? Look, there are companies out there. Trust me, I know. I'm in the space now where I know my authentic self, but I look forward to being in an organization where I can practice doing some of the game playing on a higher stakes level. Meaning, I know that I'm not going to be able to change perception. I'm not going to be able to change perception. You know, I'm not going to be able to change how organizations value diversity and authenticity or anything like that. Like, I'm not, that's not going to fall on me. I'm not trying to be a trailblazer. But what I can do, though, is while organizations are trying to figure it out, I can become a student of the organization that I'm a part of and try to figure out how to best network. Again, putting aside the HBR article because it's not about code switching. Network in order to figure out the game that's being played and then leverage it to my advantage. Because literally that's all it's about. I say that one of the companies I was with that I worked for, I experienced two different styles of people getting ahead. One company I was with, I loved it because the way that leaders got to know you was that they saw you presenting strategic plan. They saw you at national sales meetings and they got to know you personally and they would advocate for you. And then there were other companies I worked for where it was more about the social interaction. You know, go out to lunch, go out to coffee, you know, share a body joke in the hallway, you know, talk about something inappropriate together, share pictures of your kids, like things like that. And honestly, you know, it's up to us as employees of these companies. If you want to get ahead, you got to figure out exactly what game they're playing. Are they playing the game where it's, you know, closer to a meritocracy? Or are they playing the game where it's like more like high school and you just need to make sure that you can sit at the cool kids table?
Exactly. You're going to go through ups and downs in corporate.
Well, let's get specific with that. I think the other takeaway is, and you and I have talked about this before too, like you need to figure out how to navigate horrible bosses. One thing that corporate America doesn't do well is groom people to manage people.
Yes.
They take people who know how to do tactical things and individual contributors, and then they say, congratulations, you've been a great individual contributor. Now we're going to give you a team. And it's a horror. It's a nightmare.
Listen, I have heard once you get to your fifth direct report, your fifth one is the one you actually like treat right. But the first four, fuck it.
It's a total game changer. I appreciate my first job, which is why I keep shouting out Pfizer, because Pfizer did right by me.
Right.
The the way that they did it. Now, things could be different because it's been 20 years. But when I got my first manager promotion, they didn't give me a team lead role until I worked on a project where I was still on the same team with my manager, but her associate had a dotted line into me for my project. So I got like almost like people management apprenticeship. And then they moved me to another brand and put me as team lead. And I was like, okay, great. Now I'm ready to run. But that doesn't exist anymore.
Right. I was like, again, unfortunately, like I said, this company got bucked.
I'm like, look, Pfizer was great. And so, it, you know, you appreciate things like that because you because at least they recognized we can't give, we need to see how this person does with managing people before we give her own team.
Amen.
And I'm glad they did that with me. And, you know, I'm glad I was able to manage people and learn because honestly, but by managing people, I think I learned more from people who worked, you know, on my teams than I taught them because I have some phenomenal people, some really brilliant people coming out of grad school, except for you because you I didn't get to do you.
But we're going to work on that. We're going to work on that.
I've had some phenomenal people that I worked with and I honestly, I keep in touch with a handful of them and they're all doing great.
Yeah.
And in many instances, and this is the one thing, so not to segue into a whole different dialogue, but one of the things I think you get to a point where, or at least for me, like say within the past 4 or 5 years, one of the things I'm most proud of was kind of this new dynamic where you're in an organization that's a bit dysfunctional, and you have talent that works for you that's actually doing really well, but you yourself are in an environment where there may be a cap on your talent and but you don't want to leave your team behind. You want to give the promotion to the people that deserve the promotion.
Right. And now she's giving the secrets of being a manager of people.
And one of the things that I had to do was there was somebody who deserved, like I needed to move up. So that the person who, one of the people that was on my team could move into my slot. They deserved that promotion. And when things started going sideways and I had to deal with some other organizational dynamics, making the call to make sure that the person on my team got what they deserved was a priority.
Amen.
You can't let somebody else's career path be stunted by the politics of your own career path.
Word.
And that was such a phenomenal lesson to learn. I'm really proud of that. And I continue to watch this person grow and thrive and thrilled for that person. I think it's a lesson that other leaders probably could, you know, take to heart, which is like, if you can't get out of the way for whatever, you know, corporate politics, you know, whatever the corporate politics are, if you can't get out of the way, find a way to make sure that the person that's on your team still gets what they deserve in terms of a promotion. It's only fair. They do the work.
I can't pay you for that. I just want you to know. I drank all the wine. So on that note, I just want to say thank you for coming on this podcast and dropping all the gems and having this conversation. I love you to infinity. Joanna Reddick. No, you can't reach her because she's busy, but you can always reach out to ask@trillionba.com. If you have questions for Joanna, I can pass them along. I can find out. I will be the intermediary, okay? And I know I probably messed that up.
I was going to say, be the what?
Yeah, whatever I said. So listen, if you need some help or advice about specific situations, go to trillionba.com/coaching. to schedule a 30-minute strategy call with me to walk through your specific work situation. If you have a quick question or concern, you can always email me at ask@trillionba.com. I'm happy to either answer your question or connect you to the right person if you don't have the answer. Again, that's trillionba.com/coaching to schedule a 30-minute career strategy and ask@trillionba.com to submit your quick question, concern, or comment to me. So listen, you guys, we gotta go to bed. So until next time, we will keep it all the way 100 trill, And I look forward to talking to you next Sunday. Have a great week. The Trill MBA Show is a Fair World Corp. LLC production. Executive produced by Felicia and Rose Inuha. Sound design and editing by Chris Mann with Podshaper. Theme music is Kick Push by Ryan Little. Keep it trill every day, y'all.